From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Oh, it's the G and Ursula Show. How much I look forward to coming and hanging out here on a Monday. Ursula, you posted a new picture of us on our Facebook page, and here's what stood out to me. What stood out to me is people want to hear us on the weekends, too.
I know.
They want to hear us on the weekends.
What stood out to me is that we get a whole lot of love from our listeners. And I especially appreciate all of you who make a point of saying you were here starting day one and you're still here.
Yeah, those are the cool ones.
They're all cool.
How about the ones? How about the ones that I sent you a picture, a couple of them, screenshot.
Yeah, and even those of you who initially could not stand us, now 4+ years later, you're saying you're still hanging in there.
You still
rock. We love you for that.
It's like a marriage.
It really is.
Have you ever had a family member that get married, and when you first married them, you didn't like them, and then finally you're like, you know what, Steve?
You're growing on me.
I didn't like you when y'all first got married, but I like you now.
Exactly.
Was it because I'm rich now, Lois?
No. You know what? Sometimes you need to give somebody.
Steve.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes you need to give them a chance, and then you might be proven wrong. And okay. I love that you gave us a chance.
What do you got for us today, Ursula?
Well, there is another possible overdose death in Burien involving a homeless person just in the past week. Now, there have been two. So is this because the King County Sheriff refuses to enforce the camping ban? That is what Burien's mayor is suggesting. We're going to talk about that coming up in our 9:30 segment. As always, we invite you to join us on our Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO.
All right, Ursula, a lot of times on Mondays, people want to know what is going to be the top news story that Ursula's going to come with, because I'm curious myself. Top stories of the day brought to you by Waste, Scar 40, Zusu at Auburn.
I'll say this is going to be a first for the G and Ursula Show. If you are in North Bend this morning and you hear something like this, okay, it could be the one remaining zebra of the four that escaped from a trailer on I-90 near North Bend yesterday.
They just ran right past us, and you could hear their little, like, hooves clacking against the road. It was pretty cool.
It was frightening. It was exciting. It wasn't such a boring Sunday anymore.
Okay, I'm trying to imagine if you're driving along and you do see that. Cairo 7 TV reports the zebras were being transported to an animal sanctuary in Montana when they somehow got loose. People were posting pictures of their zebra sightings on social media. Whitney Bloomquist tells King 5 News three of them ended up in her backyard.
You know, I called someone. I was like, so I found the missing zebras. Like, they're in my yard. You know, not sure what to do.
Okay. Yep. Rodeo professionals had to be brought in. They wrangled the zebras into a trailer in Whitney's neighbor's yard. But as of this morning, one adult male zebra is still on the loose.
Hey, Ursula, you have taught me that everybody, when they listen to the show, not only do they want to have entertainment, but they also want to have a takeaway and they want to learn something. So I did you that solid. Thanks to Chef. Chef said something this morning and I was like, wow. And Chef says, gee, did you know? And it took me to good old research Google. And it says, are zebras white with black stripes or black with white stripes?
That's your takeaway?
That's the question. Greg Barsh, MD, PhD, is a resident expert in animal morphology at the Hudson Alpha Institute of Biotechnology.
Oh, good grief.
And he has a definitive answer. Zebras are black with white stripes.
Ooh, I learned something new this morning. Okay. We're going to do the Wild Kingdom version of the G and Ursula Show, which is always a crapshoot.
Yeah.
However, as tempting as it might be to keep the zebra if it makes its way into your backyard, it is not a good idea. And here's why. They're really cute, but they are not like horses. They have a very different temperament.
Mm-hmm.
They could viciously bite you if you come too close. Okay, I don't know if you remember, but you know, Lord Rothschild famously drove a zebra-drawn carriage through the streets of Victorian London. Well, zebras have never been domesticated.
Right.
One of the reasons is it's not easy to corral them, so I can't even imagine yesterday what that was like.
Right.
They apparently have a ducking reflex, which makes them very hard to lasso in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. They have no family structure. They have no hierarchy, unlike horses. So, and even though they look like a striped horse, most zebras are actually too small to ride. Here's another little small fact that I didn't know.
Okay.
Okay, well, first of all, you cannot take home wild animals without a permit. It's illegal in our state to own a potentially dangerous animal.
Yeah.
So the ones that are illegal to own are like lions, tigers, cougars, jaguars, cheetahs. But zebra's not on that list. Apparently, it is legal to own a zebra.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Well, I'll tell you what I do know. I have been doing this show over about 4.5 years now, and I know you so well. For some reason, it feels like the Bears discussion and way it went on Friday brought you into the zebra discussion and made you really be on your game. Because I can see a whole bunch of facts.
Yeah, last night I went deep. I was like, I'm not going to wing this one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to wing my discussion about zebras because we're going to have some angry listeners say, oh my God, you're going to get someone killed.
Okay, so you got all the facts. I have one more interesting angle with the zebras. I can see it now. What if, hear me out, y'all, what if they don't find this zebra? There is still, hear me out, there's still a zebra on the loose. And I was thinking about the people in the world, like the long-lived Marks and all of those that still believe in Bigfoot, right? What if the zebra goes around and we never find a zebra again for years, like D.B. Cooper? Right? And all of that. And so for years, it's like, hey, I saw the zebra. No, you didn't. And then 50 years from now, people are like, oh, I went to the North Bend outlets. I saw the zebra. No, you didn't. And so it's being this whole 50 thing.
50 years? I don't think they can live that long.
That doesn't matter. Facts can't get in the way of a good story.
Okay.
It could crossbreed with a horse,
which is
possible. They're called zorses. Do you know what a group of zebras is called? It's a dazzle.
A dazzle.
And do you know why zebras have stripes, G?
Because
they don't want to be spotted.
Ooh, ba-na-bum. Okay, as long as we're talking about wild animals, I'm treading on very dangerous territory here. Did you know that Washington's wolf population is making a big comeback? It actually increased by 20% last year.
We in Washington are so lucky that we've seen 15 consecutive years of wolf population growth.
That is Julia Smith with the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, and she tells Fox 13 that eventually wolves are going to be spreading throughout the state.
Historically in Washington, wolves were distributed statewide with the exception of perhaps the Columbia Basin, and that's actually where we expect them to recover too, with the exception of where we now have cities, places like Seattle and Olympia.
Right now, our state has 260 wolves, 42 different packs. It's likely that's an undercount because, okay, think about it. How hard would it be to actually identify every single animal in the state? It's to the point, though, that the Fish and Wildlife Department is thinking of lowering the gray wolf's protection status from endangered to sensitive under state law. But environmentalists say that would be a premature change. They believe the state still isn't doing enough to protect the wolves. But you know who disagrees?
Who's that?
Ranchers. They say the state isn't doing enough to protect their livestock, which wolves attack for food. This has been apparently a big debate for many years. So why does this all matter?
I think it matters. I was watching this story being talked about, and I was on the treadmill, and I thought, wow, man, now we're talking about bears, now we're talking about wolves. And I think it is important because there was a point in time that it was starting to get less. If you would have asked me, Ursula, before I read and saw this news report, how many wolves are here, I would have said, oh, you know, 800, 1,000. Mm-hmm. And like, no, we're in the 200s. And the fact that it was after growing.
Yeah.
And so, oh my goodness, considering, you know what? I bet you a lot of wolves were here before we got here. So I think this is good news.
They nearly went extinct in the U.S. in the lower 48 in the 1930s. Okay, I did dig it around a little bit. So here's a little more science, a little more science class.
Well, you've been on it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So of course, the gray wolf is a top predator. So the reason why this all matters is when they're around, they help keep deer and elk populations in check. So why does that matter? Well, they keep those animals from grazing too long in any one spot. That allows plants to grow. We're talking including trees.
Okay.
So with more trees, what happens? You have more birds and more beavers. Those animals are prey for other species. And also, with more trees, the roots will actually change the patterns of soil erosion. And that, I mean, that's what happened, actually, when they brought wolves back into Yellowstone, starting back in 1995. The patterns changed the shape of the Yellowstone River. So, I mean, conversely, if you look at if they were to go extinct, and the reason why it's important to try to bring them back and that this is such great news, the food chain would actually crumble if they went extinct. Because, again, think about it. The elk and deer population would increase. They would eat the cow and other livestock's food. Then we would have to pay that much more. We would be dealing with food shortages when it comes to beef and dairy.
Boy, you really did do your research on this. You went deep. I was not prepared for this. Yeah, I was just saying it was just
like
a good thing.
One conversation about bears where I got it wrong.
Yeah,
I'm gonna work harder.
Yeah. Wow.
Can I pour one out for the ranchers?
Yes.
Pour one out for the ranchers, folks.
Yes.
Whose cattle are allowed to graze on public lands, public wildlands, for virtually free, but want to be indemnified from the consequences of having their cattle roam around native populations of animals. Like, does anyone really care? Who is seriously being harmed by a dozen, two dozen cows being killed every year by wolves?
The ranchers.
To the extent of, like, we exterminated a species because of cattle concerns. I just have no patience for that argument.
I don't.
Yeah, you're the owner of a ranch and you've got these.
If I have 20,000 head of cattle.
Yeah,
and I lose 20. I think I'm fine.
I'm gonna be honest with y'all. I don't have the range to go this deep. I just want cheese on my jumbo jack with cheese from Jack in the Box. Y'all going way too deep right now. Ursula, can we please move
on?
We're moving on.
Well, as long as we're talking about food, how about this family restaurant that is battling the city of Snohomish over its COVID-era outdoor seating area, which the city says, you know what, y'all need a permit. You didn't get a permit for this. King 5 News is reporting that after several notices, the city has given Andy's Fish House a deadline of July 5th to comply with the regulations, or that tent is going to have to come down. Bron Journey is co-owner of that restaurant.
There are times when city codes do not make sense.
Well, he admits that he and his co-owner did not get a permit for the outdoor tent, but he argues that it does meet the international building code.
So I would like them to come here and inspect the tent and tell us why it's not safe.
So for its part, the city of Snohomish says any structures used for outdoor seating and dining must be permitted, and that has been the case since 1959. This is not new. The owner says the restaurant is willing to pay for a permit, but if they have to tear the tent down and start over, that would reduce their seating capacity from 60 to 16 and essentially would kill their business. So now many in the community are going to bat for this restaurant. More than 3,000 people have already signed a petition to keep that outdoor dining tent in place.
It's great. I mean, it brings a tear to my eyes for the support that we get.
So you be the jury.
Okay.
You be the jury.
Okay.
Should this restaurant be allowed to keep that tent? And if so, how do you go about it? Or is the city correct? They didn't have a permit and it needs to come down.
The city is correct. They did not have a permit. It needs to come down. And if they allow that to happen, oh, they don't have a permit, but hey, come on over here and inspect it and make sure it's okay. Then if that precedent is allowed to happen, then what is going to happen to the rest of everyone else that says, I'm going to build this structure. I don't ask for permission, but ask for forgiveness later. So if you allow this to continue, then people will bypass the permitting process by doing exactly that. Hey, no, I didn't get a permit, but hey, come on over, check it out, and see that it's okay. You can't do that. Like, so
I'm going to ask, and okay. I'm going to push back just a little bit, and I will ask, because I hear you, and I think you make a great point. You would be setting a precedent. You would allow for others to make that same argument.
And of the two, you follow the rules way more than me. So go ahead. Finish.
Exactly. Here's My question, though, can you bring the city over? They look at it. They make sure that it is in compliance. If it is not in compliance, then either you bring it up to code or it does have to come down. And maybe you require the business to pay an additional fee for not having gone through the proper permit instead of tearing it down and then forcing them to now lose business. So there would be some kind of additional fee. I'm just looking at a way to how do you make it work so that it's still fair to other people who have gone through the process or have to go through the process, and it doesn't encourage people. And maybe that's levy a fine. You didn't follow the rules. You have to pay a fine. But because it is
whatever decision,
to code.
Hey, Ursula, whatever decision you make right now, I hear you. Look, I bless you. Bless you right now. You are really trying. Whatever decision you make, there's somebody sitting back saying, I'm waiting for that decision to happen. I'm waiting for you to give them a pass. Once you give them a pass, I'm going to use the exact same thing.
Yep.
And you cannot discriminate against me because of what you just allowed to happen there.
No.
So whatever the fine was, I'll pay that fine. I'll do whatever. I'm watching what you're going to do. I'm watching. The city, the city's on the hook, and people are watching to see what happens.
You make great points. Okay, Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Is there a way to keep that tent up and make it fair, or should it just be torn down?
I want to give love
rules
to
are rules.
I want to give a love to Annette K. She has named the zebra DB Zebra. By the way, you were really prepared for your animal discussion today.
I make a mistake once. If I don't learn, shame on me.
All right. So at 9:47, here's the topic. What are some foods that you hated as a kid, but you absolutely love now? We'll be talking about that at 9:47. But up next, Burien Mayor Kevin Schilling. He blames this on King County's refusal to enforce the camping ordinance. We'll talk about that next, Jen Ursula.
Welcome back to the Jen Ursula Show. It is a Monday morning, and we are off to a great start. We had some really strong conversation in that first segment, and a lot of you are weighing in on our Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line about whether that tent should be taken down at that restaurant up in the city of Snohomish. And G, after a few minutes, apparently you have maybe a revised response to that.
I do. My first response was, yeah, you got to take it down. You don't have a permit. And then when I went to, you know, I'm trying to be TMI here, but I went to the restroom and I was...
Had some
deep thoughts. No, I'm being for real. And then I came back. And one of the things that stood out to me, I even said it to you guys before, I'm like, yeah, according to what they're saying that their staff... they would eliminate like 75% of their staff would lose because of this. These, and correct me if I'm wrong, this came up during COVID.
It did.
With that being said, because of extreme circumstances, and I think that we all can agree that COVID was an extreme circumstance where that where everybody was just making moves. You didn't have time to go get a permit. You had to respond. You had to move, make things happen, to do the best that you can. Because of that, I think that to make a concession for them would be fine because
it happened during COVID.
It happened during COVID, and people won't lose jobs. Look, we already have a problem with job loss and our homelessness crisis and people struggling. I don't want to see people lose jobs. So I'm coming back and I'm amending my opinion because COVID. I give them. So anybody else that's like, ooh, that precedent, nah. I'm giving it because of COVID. So that's why I would rule against that.
And I want to add one more thing because our engineer came up from downstairs and ran up and gave me an opinion about that story.
Yeah.
And he did bring up a good point.
What was that?
While they get it and make sure that they have proper permit for it, it should be unoccupied until that happens so that there is no liability and they can make good on keeping it safe.
Fair.
So I think those are two good things.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about this story because Burien's mayor believes that a homeless person who was found dead in front of City Hall Saturday died of a drug overdose. Mayor Schilling says this is the fourth overdose death since the King County Sheriff's Department stopped enforcing the controversial camping ban. And it is the second death in the downtown Burien area in just a week. This is what Mayor Kevin Schilling told Cairo 7 TV.
Since they've stopped enforcing our tent regulation around public camping, we have seen an overdose death every 2 weeks.
So that interview came in response to a letter from King County Sheriff Patty Cole Tyndall, who said that the city should revert back to its original ban, which was not as expansive. And then she said the county would start enforcing it again. But last Friday, we spoke to Mayor Schilling on the Gee and Ursula show, and he told us a couple of things that may be of a surprise to you. Mm-hmm. There's no men's shelter in Burien for the homeless to go to. So even if there was that the enforcement for men, for single men, there is no place for them to go to in terms of shelter. Mm-hmm. And then he references a column that was written about Burien's failure to provide shelter in the beginning of this clip. This is something that I wrote.
Okay. And you specifically talked about men's shelter. But here's the deal. Cities aren't the ones that are operating these shelters. Nonprofits and non-governmental organizations have to operate these shelters. We have passed a councilmatic action to allow for permits for shelter and expedite them and waive fees to open them. Unfortunately, and we've literally personally called and asked every single church and nonprofit in the city of Burien, unfortunately, nobody has wanted to open up a shelter. And we can't force anybody to do that. So until we have willing nonprofit and non-governmental organizations that are willing to partner to do that, we can't force anybody to.
Okay, so this is where I feel like there is a complete disconnect. First of all, let's go back to can you blame these overdose deaths on the sheriff's department not enforcing this ban? I think that's a stretch.
That's a stretch. No, you cannot. To sit there and say, well, this overdose would not have happened if the sheriff's department was enforcing these bans on encampments. No, you cannot.
Where would that person have gone? I think at least some of these deaths have been involved men. Fact check me, Jeff. I believe. Correct. I don't know that this latest drug overdose, but yes. So right now there is no men's shelter in the city of Burien. So even if you enforce the ban, where would they go? The one thing that maybe isn't clear is when sheriff's deputies or when law enforcement has interactions with people during and doing the enforcement of the ban, they're supposed to be telling them where they can go, what resources are available, et cetera. So I guess there's that possibility that they would have had that encounter. But until we can solve this problem of where there's a lack of shelter, if you have this expanded ban that basically includes just about every space in Burien, mm-hmm. how do you enforce this camping ban?
Right.
Because that actually goes against an appeals court ruling. Right. I mean, so basically that's why the sheriff is trying to I understand the frustration. And I know that businesses in Burien want this to be enforced. I would not want tents everywhere. But the hair on fire response needs to be where we should be sitting down with the nonprofits. If you're expecting nonprofits to be the one, or with the counties giving you money, there should be a place for men to go.
Right. Well, the part that I didn't expect, the part where I've never heard it said out loud, was when the Burien mayor said that we are waiting for, we're reaching out to nonprofits to come here and open up. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Did you just say what I think you said? Like, I've never heard it to where government says we need the nonprofits to come in here and to help us solve
this problem. Now, I know that nonprofits do fill in the gaps.
Yeah, there are partnerships.
They are, yes, no doubt about it. And shout out to the nonprofits that do fill in the holes and the gaps that government isn't able to respond to right away. But I didn't know that there was an expectation by the city of Burien waiting for them. So it's... Is that the plan to continue to wait for them? Because until then, there is still no place for men to go. So while we sit here and point fingers at others, once again, there is still no place for men to go.
The other part, though, I will say, is that I think the King County Executive's Office and the King County Sheriff's Office should be sitting down with the city of Burien instead of having this, you know what, match through the media.
Yeah.
Sit down and figure out, okay, can you enforce the previous ban? Because the mayor of Burien is saying, well, let's then not worry about this new ban that we passed. Do what you were doing before. At least we'll have something. And the sheriff had said, we didn't have an issue with your previous ban, so fix it.
Yeah.
Quick point, though. You also have to wonder on how straightforward Burien leaders are being, because they say they want to partner with nonprofits and shelters, but Burien also threatened to sue a church in their own community, Oasis Church, that did have a shelter, a sanctioned shelter. And they said, take it down, or we're going to sue you. Do you really want a shelter there? Are you really seeking providers? Because everywhere else that's looking has found them.
All right. It's just a mess.
Hey, coming up next here on the G and Ursula Show, we need to talk. And I would love for you to weigh in on this. So here's what happened. Over the weekend, I found myself, and I don't know if you are this way, but I find myself eating the same thing every day. I just do. I love it. But the things that I eat today are things that I could not stand growing up. And so I wonder, are there any foods that you hated as a kid, but you absolutely love it and can't live without now? We discuss that next on the show. Gina. Okay, Nick.
I'm just grooving a little bit to end this hour. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm talking about.
It is the G and Ursula Show. Happy Monday to all of you. Have you guys heard about a lot of the protests happening around college campuses all over the country? Well, coming up at 10 o'clock, I don't know where the conversation's going, but we're going to talk about it. I can't promise you. But we're going to talk about it, but I can't promise you where it's going because I have no idea. Because this topic.
I have what I do know for
what?
Sure.
What's that?
Is that our text line is going to light up.
Light up.
And you and I are probably going to have a really good debate.
Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you said good debate. Yeah. All right. Here's what we need to talk about. So I find myself eating the same things every single day. Like before, I used to try to like, oh, okay, let me try this and try that. And then when I do that, I find myself eating bad. But when I eat the same things every day and I'm like, you know what? I like this and I don't care if my wife judges it or not. I think she's fine with it though. So they're the things that I eat today are things that I couldn't stand as a kid. Mm. So I want to ask you, and a lot of you all are texting in, what is something that you could not stand growing up? But today you can't live without. And here's my, I'm going to go ahead and just be very simple for you, Ursula. One, asparagus. I don't know what happened. I absolutely love asparagus.
So how do you eat asparagus? Like what do you, is it grilled with a little salt and pepper and that's it?
I go right there in the skillet, or sometimes a lot of times I go in the oven and put it on broil.
Yes, right? I love it when it's a little crispy on the outside.
Yeah,
a little
seasoned on top of that, put it on broil, you know, just set it, put it on top of some foil. Two, Brussels sprouts. I don't care what y'all say. Brussels sprouts did not taste like this 30 years ago. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with the old good old Brussels sprouts. That... And then I'm from the Midwest. Anybody from the Midwest, you know what I'm going to say. Salmon. where we're from in the Midwest, you guys know any type of salmon that we get, it came from a can or it came from some East Coast stuff. So we didn't like salmon. We didn't eat that. And so we move out here to Pacific Northwest and we go to barbecues and we're like, no, thank you. No, thank you. And finally somebody makes it. They probably put a little brown sugar on there to kind of help you at first. Whatever, however way you got to eat salmon. Now today, salmon is just, it's just, where has it been all my life? So those are the three. Ursula, you got
so,
it.
Do you? You said you eat it all the time, though.
I go to the store, and I go to the chef. They make my I get my meals made every single day. I go. So today I'm gonna get my meals made for today and tomorrow. I'll go back again on Wednesday. I usually get it for 2 days. So all of my meals are getting made for me.
Mm.
That's my deal.
So I would say same thing. Grilled asparagus,
yes.
Love. I would never have thought to eat it when I was younger.
Okay.
In fact, I just remember because in Germany, white asparagus is a big deal. And I remember just cringing at the thought of eating it mm-hmm. when I was even in my 20s. But today, I love, love, love asparagus.
Mm-hmm.
Broccoli, I love. And I think it's just, again, a matter of people figuring out how to make it taste good.
Okay. You like broccoli?
I do like broccoli.
So now broccoli is one that just, it just never, it's still the same.
The strange thing for me is that I like vegetables more than I like fruit, which is bizarre world since I love sugar so
same.
Much.
Same. I'm with you.
Salmon is a big thing too.
Yeah.
Sushi. I would never have dreamed of eating sushi, but mm-hmm. I love sushi.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably about it.
Okay.
Chef, mm-hmm. you?
Gosh, the two things that I hated the most as a kid, number one was salad, any kind of salad. Like, we're not rabbits. We're not meant to eat just straight up lettuce. And I cannot enjoy salad to this day unless it has copious amounts of dressing or like blue cheese and walnuts. And then the one thing I hated as a kid I still can't touch to this day is Miracle Whip.
Like, I can't stand that still.
The tangy, vinegary mayonnaise.
Oh.
Gee, about the Brussels sprouts, though.
Yeah.
There is an actual reason why you like Brussels sprouts better today.
Okay,
because they are genetically superior. Back in the 90s, there's like this Dutch seed bank that combed through all the historical seeds of Brussels sprouts, and they found the two compounds that gave it the most acrid, bitter taste, and they genetically bred those out. So starting around like 1999, 2000 was when we started to get Brussels sprouts that actually tasted good. So they're literally different.
You learn something new on the Gene Ursula Show. Now, I want to... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to bring up something. Sandy in Covington brings up something that is so true. She says, I used to hate drinking water as a kid. Now I force my kids to drink lots of water.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh,
agree.
Yeah.
There was a time when everyone would just drink juice.
Soda, juice. Yeah, yep. Agree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to say this. Now, if you're maybe you're in the car with your parents or you're close to your parents while you're listening to this, and maybe can we all just say this? Some of our parents made our food nasty. Let me explain. I didn't like steak until I became an adult. You want to know why?
Yeah, because it was a hockey puck.
Yes. Like, why would you cook it that way? I didn't like tacos.
Oh,
Because my mom and dad, they did the hard shell.
Oh, no. I love the hard shell.
No.
Yes.
Why would you? That is torture. Like, another thing. How about some of you? How about liver and onions?
Okay, no.
Any flashbacks
to
that?
No.
Liver and onions? Like, so my point is this. I just want to take this time because I couldn't say it as a child. I'm going to say it now. Hey, parents, some of you guys made the nastiest things ever. And this is the reason why.
Pork chop sundaes, like dry pork chops.
Now, that was supposed to be a joke of pork chops and applesauce.
Yeah.
Who actually had that? I did. Who would do that to their children? Put applesauce on the same plate with pork chops. Okay, now
I think
this,
it was supposed to make it.
This conversation just went not funny.
I'm with you, G. I did the same thing. The old shake and bake back in the day.
Right? Man. Steak, though, Ursula. Did your parents ever overcook your steak?
No. My mom was an excellent cook, so I can't complain. I was spoiled.
Oh, was she?
My eating has gotten worse. I moved out of the house.
Oh. Coming up next here on the Gene Ursula Show, there's
protests happening on college campuses all over the country. We will discuss that next.
Well, yeah, question. If you lose your graduation, are you still in favor of these protests if you can't graduate with the rest of your class?
Do that next, Gene Ursula.